This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Across northern New England, there's been a steady decline in the number of school-age kids. And so in Vermont and Maine, they've been consolidating smaller school districts into larger ones to save money and expand what they can offer. Maine started about a decade ago with a carrot-and-stick approach to push districts together. Then Vermont passed a law last year also encouraging smaller towns to join educational forces. But it's a more mixed picture in New Hampshire, where local control is cherished and state-imposed mandates on districts are often frowned upon. Today in The Exchange, school consolidation. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Carl Ladd, Executive Director of the New Hampshire School Administrators Association. He's also a former superintendent in the North Country and has served as a principal and a school board member. And Carl, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for the invitation.
And also with us, Ted Comstock, Executive Director of the New Hampshire School Boards Association. He's been with the association since the mid-'80s. And Ted, welcome back. It's good to see you.
Thank you, Laura. Pleasure
well,
to
and
be here.
Ted, just starting off, how many school districts does New Hampshire have?
About 165.
And is that a lot for a state of 1.3 million people?
I don't think it's a lot, but again, it's an economy of scale. I think it's maybe about right for what we have.
Is there an optimal amount of kids per district, Ted?
I think it's a case by case. I think you got to look at each individual circumstance and decide what's best. So I know that there are a lot of studies about class size in elementary, middle school, and high school, but I think it just all depends on the community and the resources and the tax base and things like that.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because we do hear that small class sizes are in general good for kids. The teacher can spend more individual attention with each kid. And yet we also hear, Ted, you know, that some schools can be too small. There's not enough kids to have a music program or have sports teams or the other things that make school, you know, fun.
That's exactly right. And there have been many, many studies over the years that are on both sides of that issue. So it's still debated today.
What do you think, Carl? What does the research say about an optimal size for a district and how big is too big, how small is too small?
I agree with Ted. I think that it really depends on the community and what the community is willing to support. As you know, we're very much a local control state. I think that the optimal size of a community school is really up to the community.
You've been in the state for a while, Carl, and as I said, you know, served as a superintendent in the North Country, a principal, a school board member, and so forth. What's the feeling now in New Hampshire in terms of, you know, districts should come together, we should do more of a push like Maine and Vermont, or no, we should pull apart and, you know, go our own way and do it the way we want?
Well, I think there's always that tug and that tension
right. Between
wanting to create an economy of scale so that we can save the taxpayer money. But on the other hand, we want to make sure that we maintain local control over our schools. When I was a school board member in the North Country, we had a time period where one of the school districts wanted to withdraw from the SAU and form its own. I was actually the chairman of the board of the school district that wanted to withdraw. And at that time, the State Board of Education had the authority to say whether or not schools could actually withdraw. And it was very fortunate, I think, in the long run that the State Board said no, that if Grofton were to withdraw from SAU 58, then it would leave Stratford and Stark in a very precarious financial situation, and they wouldn't be able to fund a properly adequate education. And so it kind of forced the three districts to continue to work together. And I would say 25 years later, they have a very strong relationship now, and it has overcome a lot of adversity because of that.
Wow. So pardon the analogy, but the state school board in that situation kind of acted as a marriage counselor and said, no, we really think you need to stay together for the good of the kids. And 25 years later, there it is.
There it is.
That's interesting to hear about the state board. And I do wonder, Ted Comstock, We're going to talk about Vermont in just a minute. Does New Hampshire State School Board today, or any other entity at the state level, have the authority to say to districts, no, you can't break up, or yes, you can?
The state board does have a pivotal role under our statutes in a withdrawal process. And the process is pretty complicated and pretty time-consuming. But to oversimplify it, the state board does have the authority to review a withdrawal plan that's submitted by a district that wishes to leave and make a decision about that.
Review. But do they have yay or nay power?
Yes, they do. Yes,
they do.
Yes, they do.
So still, as in the case that Carl talked about, the state board could still say, no, district, you can't withdraw because it'll be too big an impact on everyone.
They could.
I don't want to disagree with my good friend, but I think in 96, the legislature rewrote the RSA 194-C, and it really took away the state board's authority to veto. So now they do still have the power to review, and a district wishing to withdraw has to submit a plan. But at the state board level, and this is my understanding, they no longer have the authority to say, no, you cannot do that. So that I think since 96, we've seen a ramp up of the number of districts that have withdrawn. And it's been over the objection sometimes of the State Board of Education saying this could cause a financial hardship for the remaining districts, but yet they've been allowed to withdraw anyway.
So to use the marriage analogy again, in the past 20 years, we've seen more divorces?
Correct.
What do you think's behind that, Ted?
I think it reflects sort of the New Hampshire culture in a way. It's the whole consolidation or lack thereof or split off is sort of a perfect New Hampshire conundrum, it seems to me, between cost and control. That's what we're really talking about here. Mm-hmm. And many places that can afford it would like to have their own superintendent, would like to have their own schools, would like to have their own school board in the case of moving from a cooperative to an individual school district. So if they can afford it and they think that's in the best interest of their children, then they pursue that. There are others in less wealthy communities that frankly can't afford that, so they stay within a configuration. But it's kind of what we struggle with in New Hampshire, I think, all of the time.
So the perfect New Hampshire conundrum, and yet now we're in an era, as you well know, Ted, of declining school age populations across the state. So can districts really do this anymore, spin off on their own when chances are they have fewer kids?
Again, I think it's a case-by-case basis because even though there are less kids, there are certainly costs that continue really regardless of the number of kids. I mean, in order to effectuate real savings, you'd have to reduce staff, reduce teachers, reduce that, and that comes back to the class size issue you talked about before. So declining enrollments is a problem, but also providing an adequate education to every student is a foremost responsibility.
I said at the outset that Vermont and Maine are pushing districts, giving them financial incentives actually to get married, to join forces. What do you make of the fact, Ted, that New Hampshire is taking this sort of opposite direction?
I think you alluded to it in your opening comments, Laura, and that is that we are fiercely proud of being local governance, local community governance, and combining that with looking at resources from community to community, people are proud of their schools. They want to do everything they can. And if they can afford their own arrangement, they're looking at that.
Even if that new arrangement means, you know, there's only 50 kids in the high school.
Sometimes that's been the case.
What do you think, Carl?
Well,
here we are flanked by these two states that are going completely the opposite way.
Well, I think, you know, in 1963, we had our own kind of consolidation effort. There was co-op legislation that was passed at that time that really provided some financial incentives for school districts to join together into cooperative school districts, really centered around building aid. And so that's when you saw a number of school districts join together, and some of them were shotgun weddings. There were officials that went around from the state and kind of pushed people into joining regional school districts and cooperative school districts and area agreements. Some of those shotgun weddings have stood the test of time, and some of them haven't.
That's interesting. Ted, you want to jump in?
Another big point is the funding of our schools, and Carl just alluded to it, but unlike many states, New Hampshire relies, if not entirely, for the vast majority of its money for local schools for the local taxpayer. For so example, in Maine, I did a little research on Maine, and Maine provides about 50% state support to local school districts. And so when they went into the consolidation era, they said, if you don't consolidate per whatever the regulations were, we're going to penalize you and you're going to be receiving less state aid. Contrast that with here, where about 75 to 80% of the money to run local schools comes from local taxpayers. So the state doesn't have quite the lever it does in other places. So I think that's a factor, too. And it's also a factor why local communities make the decision they do, because they're footing the vast majority of the bill.
No, I know you guys can't answer this directly. I'm going to ask you anyway. So I understand what you're saying about the funding and how it's different here and so forth, Ted. What's best for kids?
I think what's best for kids is to have a superb education in every way possible, but being mindful of the cost of that education. And that's what local school boards work for every day, along with their superintendents and administrative staffs.
Carl, what do you think?
And I think that in addition to just the superb education, I think that also has to be access to that superb education and equitable access to that education. And I think that sometimes, excuse me, when we break apart and we go smaller and smaller and smaller, there are fewer opportunities for students to have that equitable access to a superb education because the resources become much more limited.
So they might not have enough money for band or drama club.
Correct.
Or whatever.
Correct. I mean, there are many school districts in the North Country and in the Southwest and in other areas as well that are struggling trying to find highly qualified math and science teachers and trying to find music, art, PE teachers just because of the size of their schools.
Well, again, the exchange number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Today in exchange, we're looking at school consolidation. With fewer kids in northern New England these days, the pressure is on in two neighboring states for districts to consolidate. But as we're hearing, that's not been the case in New Hampshire. We're looking at why and how districts make these decisions to either band together or go it alone. Has your town been part of an SAU or a cooperative district with other towns? And how has that worked out? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Carl and Ted, as we look at other New England states and their experience with this, I want to go now to Vermont. Joining us from there is Tiffany Posh. She is with Vermont Digger. She's education reporter there. And Tiffany, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for asking.
So Vermont passed this Act 46 just last year to encourage school districts to merge into larger units. How come?
Well, lawmakers were responding to taxpayers who had begun rejecting school budgets because spending kept going up. Vermont student enrollment has been going down steadily for some time now, and with fewer students to educate, it doesn't make sense fiscally or educationally for the state to keep delivering education in the same way. So the state has 277 school districts and 285 school boards, but only about 84,000 K-12 students. Some superintendents end up going to two school board meetings a week per month. So, you know, that's a lot of time. And in a sense, Vermont's school system is almost hyper-local. And at the same time, there are some schools with single-digit class sizes and high school senior classes with less than 50 students, which means they're not getting they're not having the same access to opportunities for learning that a larger school can deliver. They can have a lot more types of courses and offerings.
Foreign language or music or
right, robotics.
Or whatever.
STEM, yeah.
Wow. So some of the same incentives that we've been talking about here in New Hampshire, smaller families, fewer school-age kids, and at some point, people in Vermont at least seem to say, look, let's band together. What are the incentives that Vermont is putting forward for districts to do this?
Well, there's some carrots in the law that give tax incentives to school districts that merge into the kind of larger units described in the law, and they have to meet certain deadlines. But the communities that have come forward and merged or proposed mergers so far have listed expected cost savings from merging as well as these greater opportunities for the kids.
So those are the incentives. Now, what about the drawbacks? I mean, transportation, for example, Tiffany, you know, sometimes when you form a big unit, you have to send your kids on a bus for an hour in the morning.
Yeah, that doesn't seem – transportation hasn't been as big of an issue in the places that have gone forward so far. I think that'll be a bigger issue in this next year where this next year is going to be places that are finding it harder to merge, and one of those reasons is geography, of course, you know. There's the drawbacks otherwise, the problems people have been about local control. What the law asks people to do is it asks the study groups to form, and the merger process is voluntary, but you are mandated to talk to your neighbors. So these communities have created study groups to look into whether they should merge or not.
So who's been supporting this law, Tiffany? What groups or what types of people are generally in favor?
Well, I mean, the state has certainly been pushing the law, but they were also surprised with the number of merger proposals that came forward in the first year that it was offered. They had expected around four or five proposals, but so far 55 towns have voted to merge. And in 40 of the towns, the vote has been pretty overwhelming.
Wow, yeah, that's a lot. So who didn't want this, Tiffany?
So the vote has failed in mainly it failed in Franklin Northeast so far as a group that came forward that wanted to merge, as well as Orleans Central. And there it seemed like local control was the issue, because when you're unifying into these bigger units, you're taking, you know, maybe eight school boards and becoming one.
Yeah.
And so that means you have maybe two people representing your town. And I was at one of the study committees in the Upper Valley the other night, and the facilitator working with the group said that, you know, there's a lot of regional and local pride in Vermont, but there's a dark side to that. And that dark side is, do I trust my neighbor to take as good a care as my kid as I would?
Wow. So when Maine passed its law almost a decade ago, it had a number goal of getting down to 80 districts statewide. Did Vermont, Tiffany, have a specific number goal, or was it more just a, we encourage districts to take a hard look at this?
We encourage districts to take a hard look. They didn't want to mandate they were trying to get districts to do this voluntarily, so they did not say any, like, that it had to be a certain number in the end.
Okay, so I guess that's more just a push. It's not so much.
Well,
you know,
yeah, the real it's interesting because they said that, but Act 46 does have the state board in 2019 looking at what areas haven't merged, and
okay,
it tasks them with combining school districts. So a lot of places feel like they have to pick their dance partners and come up with a merger, or it's going to be done to them anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Tiffany. Real interesting, and we'll maybe check back in with you in another year or so on this and see how
okay,
it's going.
Okay, I'm glad to have been here. Thank you.
Thanks. That's Tiffany Posh again. She's education reporter at Vermont Digger. You can join us as we look at school consolidation here in the Granite State, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. If your town has been part of a cooperative district or an SAU with other towns, how has it worked? What have been the benefits? What have been the drawbacks? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, school consolidation. We're looking at the trends in Vermont and Maine and seeing how they're playing out in New Hampshire. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. What do you see as the benefits of school districts banding together or going it alone? We've been finding out about the trends here in the Granite State, how the pressure's been on in two neighboring states for districts to consolidate, but not so much here in New Hampshire. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests are Carl Ladd, Executive Director of the New Hampshire School Administrators Association, and Ted Comstock, Executive Director at the New Hampshire School Boards Association. And gentlemen, before we go to our listeners, Ted, I did want to hear from you on the Vermont story that we heard from Tiffany at Vermont Digger. Real interesting what the Green Mountain State is trying to do.
I thought it was an interesting segment, Laura, and I think it was instructive, particularly when you compare it to the Maine experience with consolidation. I frankly know a little bit more about Maine than I do about Vermont at this point, but I think both illustrate both positives and negatives if a state is going to approach this. In Maine, as you said, they were seeking to have the districts go from 290 to 80, and they tried to do that, it sounds to me, like in a pretty draconian fashion. And there wasn't a lot of buy-in. There wasn't a lot of collaboration with stakeholder groups. It was sort of a pronouncement. And then there was a penalty if you didn't do it. And frankly, from what I have heard from my colleagues in Maine, that didn't work very well.
Yeah, I've heard that there's some pushback there.
There was a lot of resistance. And in fact, they now have 164 districts. The number of superintendents has reduced somewhat, but the number of school boards is about the same as it was before. So I think that illustrates the fact that what I heard from the woman in Vermont, it sounds like Vermont is approaching it in a more collaborative, studied case-by-case basis. So I think that if New Hampshire would go down this track, it would be well to learn from our neighbors in Vermont and Maine to determine what the best process would be, because it's not one size fits all.
Yeah, and you've said, Carl, in terms of the cost savings that Tiffany told us Vermont is hoping to get, and again, the law is just a year old in Vermont, you've said the devil's in the details when it comes to that.
Well, I think she said that transportation was perhaps not an issue or has not become an issue yet. I think transportation costs are a real issue, especially in the most rural areas where geography plays a huge role. If you're talking about putting a student on a bus for 2 hours or more in the morning and again in the afternoon.
I think 2 hours?
There are some students now in some of our more rural areas that are on the bus for well over an hour. In the morning and in the afternoon to get to and from school.
That's a long time to sit on a bus, especially in an era when kids are supposed to be, moving.
Mm-hmm. And if you're talking about further consolidation and bringing students into more of a centralized location than those schools or school districts that are in the outer edges of that region are really going to be impacted on transportation. So transportation costs are going to be a major factor. I think one of the things that everyone hopes for when they create these consolidated school districts is that they're going to cut the administrative overhead. But the reality is, in most places where I've seen this occur, either in Maine or in Massachusetts when I was there, there may be only one superintendent, but there are other leaders that end up becoming hired underneath in order to meet the needs of all of the individual districts and all of the individual communities that remain, because they still want to have some personalized attention from the central office, regardless of the size of the district.
Boy, it's hard to figure out, isn't it, Carl? I mean, nobody wants their 12-year-old to sit on a bus for 2 hours a day. On the other hand, I've seen with my own kids, who are in a big district here in Concord, the benefits of, a great music program and a great drama program and great sports programs and, school newspapers and, all this stuff. So it's hard to figure out.
Well, and there are lots of arguments to be made for small community schools as well. The relationships that you build.
Right.
And personal just attention. That sense of community, smaller class sizes where teachers get to really know students and have an impact in their lives in a really positive, meaningful way. Which not to say that that does not happen in larger schools, but in small schools, there just tends to be more of that sense of community.
It's easier to get lost in a big school.
And I think that there's a lot to be said for that. There's a community in the North Country that I'm very familiar with. There are 31 students in a K-6 elementary school. Fabulous educational results as far as test scores. Great community, resource. It's a community center for the town, and everyone takes great pride in that village school.
31 students in K through 6. What's that, like 4 or 5 kids per class?
Well, there are multi-grade classes.
Sure.
So there are 3 teachers, and they all teach multiple grades.
Wow. All right. Well, lots to dig into and no easy answers, that's for sure. The exchange number for you to join us with your questions, comments, and personal experiences with this issue of school consolidation, whether to do it or not, what is to the best benefit of kids and taxpayers, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Barry's calling in from Washington. Hi, Barry. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. I just moved up here recently from the state of Connecticut, and education down there is funded by town also, although the state pays a lot of money. They just had a lawsuit that was settled last week after 11 years where a judge found that the state was not distributing money correctly, and they're going to have to look at it. And the reason I bring that up is I think as far as money goes, one of your people just was talking about how there isn't the savings. But I think there's savings in other ways as far as costs for fuel, for textbooks, for human resources, for maintenance and all those types of things. And I really think that as school systems become more and more expensive, that it's going to become necessary to have some kind of consolidation versus having a parochial view that every town has to control their educational system.
So it's inevitable, Barry, you think, given rising costs and so forth?
I think down the line it will be, yes.
Okay.
I certainly do.
Thanks for calling in, and interesting to hear from Connecticut. I heard about that lawsuit last week. What do you think, Ted? This is inevitable, and we might have to give up that cherished local control.
I guess I'm a little more optimistic than that. I don't think it's inevitable. I think what is inevitable is a return to our long-held local governance culture, and it's particularly strong in New Hampshire. But as you look at the history of public education throughout the United States, and particularly in New Hampshire, it's always been valued as locally based. And I think there's still a strong strand of that. And there's talk about declining enrollment in New Hampshire, and it's true there has been for the last several years. But that's leveling, and we're seeing trends that it's going to increase. So I don't think that's a forever problem. And I think the whole idea of cost savings is great if you can do it, but I think you need to look at what that cost is going to cost you in the long run relative to local governance and personalization of education and community involvement and all those sort of things. So as you said before, it's not an easy answer, and all of those things have to be weighed out.
Well, Barry, thank you so much for calling. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477, email exchange@nhpr.org. Send us a tweet. Find us on Facebook. Here's an email from Michael in Newmarket. He says Newmarket has had a chance to join Oyster River, Durham, and Exeter Cooperative in the past, but decided to stay independent. Michael says we have a crumbling 80-year-old junior high school building in our town. 2 years ago, we had a vote to build a new school, and it didn't pass. Now, Michael says, our kids have to suffer when they could have been attending one of the best 2 high schools in the state. So, Carl Ladd, there's someone who wishes his district consolidated and didn't go alone.
Well, I think there's always a trade-off. And one of the things that we keep talking about is that tension and tug between local control and what may be best educationally for children. And bond issues are always very contentious. Made much more so now that the fact that there's no state building aid provided for school districts trying to build. I think I don't know the particulars, but my guess is that one of the reasons why Newmarket had a difficult time passing a bond was because there is no state building aid. And there
the state
is
used
none.
To kick in a fair bit.
Correct.
And
especially for a community
that.
Like Newmarket, they would have received quite a bit. And now there is no chance of that occurring until the state lifts the moratorium on building aid.
All right. Well, Michael, thank you for the email. And we're going to go now to Cornish and talk to Nicole Saginaw. She's on the Cornish School Board and head of the transition team to withdraw from SAU 6, which included Cornish, Claremont, and Unity. And Nicole, really good to have you. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So why is Cornish leaving the SAU?
Well, there are a couple of issues, and I've been listening to your conversation, and some of the issues for us have been very different. We have been part of SAU 6 since, I think, back in the 1960s.
Wow.
And Claremont is, you know, it's a large city, city system, which has several elementary schools, a middle school, high school. And our school is a small rural K-8, now it's a little, we have pre-K-8 school, students having high school choice. So our needs are very different from the Claremont schools, and we're looking to have an administrative team that would serve our interests in particular. And I think it's more difficult for a superintendent who's really tasked with serving a large district, also serving these small satellite districts. But in addition, the costs for us were steeper than we think we can do it on our own, because the Claremont SAU office is a large building with many employees. There's a big overhead, a big infrastructure that we were paying a small percentage of, but still, it turned out that our percentage of their SAU costs were our percentage was larger than what we thought we could do on our own.
So that's interesting, Nicole. So often cooperative districts are presented as a way to save money, but you seem to be saying you could save money by going on your own.
In our particular case, so I've heard a lot of a case-by-case basis.
Sure.
Absolutely. Not one-size-fits-all situation. So so for us, it was a cost savings, but also we're in a unique position because the town just north of us, Plainfield, New Hampshire, has been its own small district, SAU, for a few years. And they're a similar community to ours in many ways. They have a single K-8 school. Their students go to Lebanon High School. And we have an opportunity to share administrative staff with them.
In terms of the school itself and the kids, yeah. So Cornish is going to have its own K-8 system in terms of the kids, and I hear you on sharing administrative functions. So how many kids, Nicole, will be in that pre-K-8 system?
About 80, somewhere in the 80s.
80 kids?
And yes. So, now, the school used to have almost about 200 kids in it. So we've had a serious decline in enrollment. And, of course, some people have talked about closing the school. But in a small town, the school is the heart of that community. And we had an expansion of the school in the 1990s, which was partially funded by private donations from townspeople. This is a very important building and center for our town, and so there, you know, we really hope to not have to close the school.
So,
but it turned.
Yeah, yeah, sorry to interrupt you, Nicole. I apologize. So that's like 10 kids per grade. Roughly, 80 kids, K through 8.
Yeah, well, it does. Yeah,
maybe 9.
It doesn't work out exactly
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, something.
So
something like that.
What does that mean for what you can offer those kids, like music or drama or sports or foreign languages? I'm just wondering about that.
Well, so of course that's an issue, and but that was not an issue that was necessarily addressed by our being a member of SAU 6.
Really? You didn't have that there either?
Well, you see, SAU 6, again, Claremont has its own personnel. So we weren't gaining programs by being part of the Claremont district. We weren't part of the Claremont district. We did, however, share part-time teachers, for example, art and music teachers with the Unity School District. So Unity being a small district on the other side of Claremont, they were looking for a part-time music teacher. We were looking for a part-time music teacher. We've hired the same part-time music teacher. so that person has more hours.
Wow. So when is this process
so
complete,
Nicole? So those opportunities are available for us with the Plainfield District, and it's they're next-door communities instead of further away.
Okay. Nicole, thank you very much. Lots going on there.
Okay.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Bye.
That's Nicole Saginaw, again, Cornish School Board member and chair of the Transition Committee. Our guests for the hour are Ted Comstock with the New Hampshire School Boards Association and Carl Ladd with the New Hampshire School Administrators Association. And gentlemen, let's go right back to our listeners. Lori is joining us from Hanover. Hi, Lori. You're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead, Lori.
Yes. Well, I was bringing up, I have a daughter with severe autism and a son also with autism. And we moved to the area about 6 years ago and, you know, deciding we had to move here for job reasons and deciding on where to live with two kids with special needs was very tricky. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I knew if I moved to Plainfield or Cornish, we would be a real burden on that district. But one of the concerns is even in a larger district like Hanover, they do not provide the full continuum of alternative educational environments that is required by the IDEA.
Even in a bigger district like Hanover, Lori?
Yes, it's just not available.
So what are you doing about that?
My daughter is segregated and is not have any access to her regular peers, although she could if they provided the full continuum.
Okay. Lori, I'm going to let you go because your phone's sort of cracking out there. But what do you think, Ted Comstock, even in a bigger district like Hanover, not getting all the services that she feels her kids need?
Obviously, I can't comment on that particular situation, or I don't know Hanover's circumstance, so I can't comment on that either. But I do know that Hanover is generally considered one of the best school districts in the state. And so I would think they would be providing a full range of benefits. And again, the point the caller made illustrates the pro side of perhaps consolidation because it does make available perhaps more resources in those particular areas.
What do you think, Carl?
Well, I agree with Ted. I certainly couldn't comment on a specific student issue, but I do think that the resources that students need are more readily available in larger school districts than they are in smaller districts.
And you hear her, you know, having to think about that and make choices as to where they're going to move based on the size of the school district.
Well, and I think that that's a choice that that many of us have made over the years when we have school-age children as to where we want to raise our children and in which community and what schools are there and what types of schools and what kinds of programs that they offer. And it sounds like she made a good decision.
Well, ask any real estate agent and they'll tell you that that's a big question that they get from people. Thank you for that call and good luck to you, Lori. Coming up, we're going to hear from someone on the school board in Pelham. Now, that went through an SAU breakup a couple of years ago and was on the other end of that situation. We'll hear about that and we'll take a lot more of your calls. So join us at 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking once again at school consolidation. With fewer kids in northern New England, the pressure's on in two neighboring states, Vermont and Maine, for districts to consolidate. But that hasn't been the case, as we're hearing here in the Granite State. We're looking at why and how districts do make that decision, whether to band together or go it alone. We're hearing lots of examples from around the state. And let's hear from you. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Carl Ladd, Ted Comstock, we're going to go now to southern New Hampshire and talk with Brian Carton. He's chair of the Pelham School Board, which also dealt with this process a couple years ago. And Brian, good to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Lauren.
So you were in an SAU with Windham a couple years back, and from what I understand, Windham withdrew maybe in 2010 or 2011. What was behind that breakup, Brian?
So I joined the board in 2011, and I think both boards recognized that both districts had grown over the years to the point where we each had roughly 2,000 students in our school districts. And a single SAU had an awful lot on their hands to manage. And so we certainly both recognize the fact that all of the people like the superintendent and the business administrator, et cetera, were attending many meetings at night, attending to both school districts and trying to divide their time reasonably between the two districts. Windham, however, decided to take action. Pelham was hesitant to make any changes. We had plenty going on in our district already. We were trying to find a permanent home for our kindergarten students. We were one of the districts that did not have kindergarten back when the state said that all districts must implement that. So we recognize the benefit of becoming two separate SAUs, but we did not want to deal with the additional cost or the distraction of managing that.
So additional cost?
Oh yeah, because we shared the cost of all those personnel and supplies and operations of IT equipment and everything else with Windham. And when you become two different districts, now you need two superintendents, you need two business administrators, you need two HR directors, two curriculum directors. You know, you have to find we were going to be hiring additional staff. And so we were looking at a situation where when this happened, we were going to be needing a full complement of staff, about nine people, somewhere between 9 and 11. We settled on 9 in the end, I believe. And we had no place for them to sit.
So, Brian, we just heard from someone in Cornish, and again, every situation is obviously different, but the folks in Cornish voted to leave their SAU because they think that they will save money by leaving.
Well, I think if you look at it from the perspective that having the full-time attention of those professionals in the SAU for your district, all to yourself, they will find ways of making your district run better. I certainly believe that we've benefited from this. It was just a tough transition.
Okay, so that's what I was going to ask you. You know, how's it going now? It was a couple years ago.
So we managed to get a structure put together for them to sit in. So they have offices, and we solved the kindergarten problem at the same time. We basically removed the kindergarten portable that the state had provided to us and put in a much larger, robust structure, which is technically a portable, but it's portable. It's very, very solid. So one half of the building is the kindergarten classrooms. The other half of the building is the SAU offices. We hired a terrific superintendent. I have, I think, the best decision the Pelham School Board ever made was hiring Amanda Lacaros. And she came in. She put up with a lot of hardship that first year. She worked out of a construction trailer, you know, the little management trailer
at
the construction sites. This sad little trailer. So,
welcome to your new office, right? So just to clarify for folks, Brian, so when Windham said, you know, Pelham, we don't want to be with you anymore. We want to break up with you, to put it that way. The district offices were in Windham, so you guys in Pelham had to build new offices or put your superintendent in
something.
A trailer.
Yep. So we managed to it was challenging, but we did find a way to do that with practically no real impact to the taxpayer, just because we had been paying for the kindergarten trailer at that point, $125,000 a year, and it was never going to go away. It was not a lease to own. It was a rental for infinity.
Well, Brian, let me ask you one last question about that's come up a lot this hour, and that is, you know, sometimes the concern is that if a school is too big, you know, a district's too big, kids have to be on the bus forever or they get lost in a large school. The downside of smaller schools is sometimes you can't afford to offer, you know, certain activities or courses or sports teams and so forth. Has that been the case in Pelham since Windham left? Are you now too small to offer, you know, foreign languages or drama club?
No, not at all. No, we're probably just the right size. With a town of about 13,000 people in just under 2,000 students. We offer a good, solid curriculum, plenty of sports, and we send students who want to learn some of the CTEC type of programs to Salem or Hudson or Pinkton.
A little easier because you're more in a suburban area of the state, not so geographically spread out like in the North Country. There'd be more
challenges. That's very true.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, Brian, thank you very much for being with us. Real interesting.
Thanks.
That's Brian Carton again. He's chair of the Pelham School Board, talking about his town's experience with school consolidation and breakup. And we'd love to hear from you, too. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Carl and Ted, let's go right back to our listeners. And Brian's calling from Piermont. Hi, Brian. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I just wanted to chime in with kind of the parent perspective. We just moved here from North Carolina, originally from Maine, so we're familiar with the SAU system. And we live in Piermont, so a rural area, Upper Valley. We're technically in SAU 23. And then when we were enrolling our children this this summer and trying to decide where we're going to live, you know, a lot of it came down to, for us, the school system. And once we got to know the school, I think we gained a lot of confidence. But as outsiders coming into a sort of different system, it was a little different to see that, you know, grades pre-K through 8 in a school of a total 62 children, I believe. And so, you know, it was a little alarming to hear them say, oh, great, another third grader, we only had 2.
Oh.
So that was a little bit like, you know, is there going to be enough teaching staff? Number one, I knew ahead of time, you know, that they already were struggling to get enough teachers. And the other frustrating part for us was that once they, much similar to your guest from Cornish, once they hit high school, they do get a choice. And so there was the Rivendell school system, which is more convenient for us for work. They offer before and after school programs, which our school does not. And in terms of being able to have both of us working, it makes it rather difficult because there's no before and after school options. And the fact that we can't take them down the road to a school that's almost just as close, where they could be with the same children from elementary straight through high school, because that will be one of their high school choices, was a little frustrating. And so that was a little bit of a different take for us, and this is our first opportunity to live in a rural area.
Wow.
And while I feel like they're getting very good individual attention, at least so far in the early goings of this school year, I like it a lot better in that regard than where we previously lived, where their class sizes were 30 and 22.
Yeah, that's the downside, isn't it? Those giant classes and the teachers can't really pay attention. You hear about that in Manchester, where the class sizes are so big.
We like the teachers, but again, you know, the lack of being able to get them somewhere convenient before or after school without having to find a private nanny, and just wondering, are they going to have teachers next year, the following year, is a little bit concerning. So that's kind of just our take, being a little bit newer to the system. Definitely got pros and cons, but I could see where even further, again, aggregation of the systems where even elementary would be allowed a choice would probably be good. Maybe create some competition.
Sure.
Brian,
welcome to New Hampshire. We hear about a lot of people moving to North Carolina these days with Research Triangle and all that. So it's good that that you're here. Thanks a lot for the call. And Carl, that real interesting, you know, seeing some of the benefits of that personal attention, but a little alarming when they say, oh, good, another third grader. We only had 2. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of uncertainty in these teeny tiny districts.
Oh, absolutely. There are many schools that are struggling with low enrollment, whether or not they're going to stay open. How are they going to consolidate? Do they want to consolidate? We talked, the Cornish school board member talked about the fact that their school is the center and the heart of their community. Many of these small towns feel exactly that way about their schools.
Yeah, so you don't want to close
them.
Building.
And they want to keep them open at whatever the cost sometimes. If you think about the cost per pupil of some of these small rural schools, they're incredibly high. But yet they don't offer some of the things that larger schools can offer. And so there is just that choice that has to be made.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate sometimes.
With both parents working. And again, I'm in a big district, Concord, and there's before and aftercare and all sorts of stuff for families where both parents are working. Well, Brian, good to hear from you. Here's an email from Gordon that just came in, and he says, this is a question I wanted to ask, so thank you, Gordon. He says, you need to distinguish SAU breakups from co-op and area school breakups. SAUs involve administration only. Area and co-ops involve the actual schools. So this is an important point of clarification, and I wonder if you can help us out with that, Ted Comstock.
That's a topic that would take a long time to really get through. So I'm going to talk about SAUs a little bit. And as we were talking and listening to the callers, it occurred to me that in a way New Hampshire has had consolidation for a long time, maybe not in the manner that Vermont and Maine is thinking about it, but we have multi-district school administrative units already throughout the state and have had for a good long time. And that was a long-time effort to try to consolidate administrative costs.
So you'd have one, said in the 60s, that
you'd
got
have,
started.
You'd have one superintendent for perhaps five or six different districts, and then you'd have a school board within each one of those districts. Now, a co-op, by contrast, is or sometimes called a regional school district. You have one school board that represents many different towns.
So that pulls from area towns.
Right, exactly.
Can you give us an example? Just
White Mountain Regional would be one of those in the North Country. Carl's very familiar with that, where there are representatives from each of the towns in the co-op that form the school board. They have one central office, a superintendent, and you know, various administrators to help help function that in their schools generally in each one of, not every one of the schools, but elementary schools in many of the towns.
Exeter has a cooperative school district. Pemmy Baker in the Plymouth region. Governor Wentworth in the Lakes region is another.
Is this largely a an administrative difference between, you know, a question of governance between these two different types of entities?
Well, an SAU is, as Ted said, it's a multi-district SAU. So there is one superintendent, but each one of the districts maintains their own autonomy. They raise and appropriate their own funds. They create their own budgets. They have their own legislative sessions with town meeting. A cooperative has just the one regional school board. There's only one district. There's one budget. All the decisions are made at that cooperative regional level.
Is that a better model?
I don't know that it's better. I think it's more efficient.
More manageable because you have less sort of competing politics and so forth.
Well, I think the competing politics remain the same because all
of
the communities remain still a political entity. So the politics don't really change. I think it is the governance structure that changes.
And one of the real cutting edge issues on that, even as we speak, in the legislature the last couple of years, they've dealt with the issue of how do districts within a co-op withdraw. And actually, there's a study committee going on, just starting, to look at, you know, how and when it would be appropriate for a given district to withdraw from a co-op. So
yeah.
It's a cutting-edge issue.
Well,
and so the issue becomes not around consolidation, but still talking about further dissolution of the entities that we've had currently in place. I mean, at one time, we had 48 SAUs in the state. Now we have 100. So there's this constant breakup of what were efficient, at least from an economy of scale perspective, that are now getting smaller and smaller. And we're continuing to look at that with this co-op withdrawal study.
So you're concerned, it sounds like, Carl, that this study may encourage even more breakups.
I'm afraid that it could lead down that pathway, and I'm just not sure that, you know, marriages are inherently supposed to be difficult to break up, and I think that in the past what's happened is districts that have left have usually been the more affluent districts, and so the districts who are left kind of holding the pieces of trying to fix things are the districts with fewer resources, and that creates then kind of a spiral of funding issues and personnel issues, just trying to meet the needs of students. So I think that we just need to be cautious about how we go into that.
Let's take one more call if we could. Abigail's calling from Greenfield. And Abigail, we're heading into the end of the hour, so I'll ask you to be brief. Thanks for being on the air with us.
Sure. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I just wanted to call because I come from a town in Greenfield where we are part of a regional group, and there are some pros and cons, I think, that are really important. But overall, and this is probably a matter of debate even within my own district, but I think that the benefits really outweigh the cons. Because like one of you were just saying, when there is a pullout, it's often the more affluent town, and we've seen that before with Mason, Greenville, and New Ipswich. Mason recently pulled out of the district, and that was one of their more affluent towns. So some of the benefits that I think are really important to know, and you guys have talked a lot about the small schools being so central to their small towns. And we really see that in our district. And we've tried to balance some of the administrative costs and the expense per pupil a couple of different ways. In one situation for a few years, what we tried doing was sharing a principal among the elementary schools.
How did that work?
We for three of our towns, Hancock, Francistown, and Greenfield, we had a principal that was just for those three towns.
Okay.
Elementary schools. And overall, I don't think it was a super successful model.
Well, and Carl is a former principal. He's shaking his head. Abigail, I got to let you go in the interest of time. But Carl, real quick.
Sharing schools is for a principal. You're always in the wrong place at the wrong time. It just is inevitable.
Well, Abigail, I'm sorry I had to cut you off there. And both of you, thank you very much for being here. Ted Comstock, it was good to see you.
Thank you.
Ted Comstock, Executive Director of the New Hampshire School Boards Association. And Carl Ladd, good to have you too. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Carl Ladd, Executive Director of the New Hampshire School Administrators Association. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters.